Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so small crowd, but we are not lacking for any stories this week because we had not only one, but two very fatal police shootings happen pretty much within days of each other.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the Derek Chauvin trial is wrapping up, and they're supposed to do closing arguments on Monday. So, kind of a tense time in the U.S. right now, is it?
Yep.
And on top of that, we also had a couple of mass shootings happen as well. One that literally just happened today. And yeah, I really don't know what to add to that. I want to, like, is this some kind of, like, the human mind has this thing where it's basically a survival mechanism where it wants to try and find patterns in things that don't exist. And the thing about stuff like this, when it comes to when, you know, awful shit happens back to back like this, the human mind wants to kind of try and say, is like, is this some kind of trend or something? Is this some kind of sign or something like that? It's like, not really. It's just awful shit happens sometimes. And sometimes they get clustered together like this. Obviously, there are systematic issues that you can point to that essentially makes stuff like this kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but that's about the extent of it. There's also just the fact that basically, my better nature does not want to say that the entire Republican Party has gone completely insane, but certainly a sizable and very loud segment of it has, and I don't think we have it listed here on our show notes today. Yeah, I don't think we do. Yeah, apparently a new sort of faction within the Republican Party has spawned that is using the America First, you know, byline, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
Who claim that, and this is an exact quote here. I don't want to say that I'm putting words in anybody's mouth. They're calling it the Anglo-Saxon Caucus. I mean, what is there to add to that? Basically, it's formed by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is unfortunately from my state, and Paul Gosar from Arizona.
Yeah.
Arguing in favor of uniquely Anglo-Saxon political traditions and new infrastructures that befits the progeny of European architecture. This comes after, you know, you've been hearing all the bullshit coming from Tucker Carlson and fucking Mark Levin on Fox saying that Democrats want to, quote, brown America. And on the one hand, you want to think of it and say, oh, this is sort of like the last dying gasp of the old waspy privileged ruling class finally, you know, going on into the great good night. Doesn't make it any less infuriating. Like, at this point, it's really only a matter of time until Tucker Carlson just drops the N-bomb live on television.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. Like, they're not even trying to hide it behind, like, language of, like, traditional American values or rural America or any of those, like, dog whistles. No, they are just straight up saying it. Anglo-Saxon. Funny about that, even though I'm, like, the whitest human being on the planet, that label would not apply to me because my heritage is Scottish and Irish, and also a little bit of American Indian thrown in there too, but that's minor. And it certainly wouldn't apply to you, Chris, and it wouldn't really apply to a lot of people on Smashpad. On the one hand, I'm at least glad that they're no longer trying to hide it anymore. But anyway, it wasn't all bad shit that happened this week. there were some other things that happened as well. We got some science news. We got some news from a very popular anime franchise that it, like a storied anime franchise that's been caught up in legal battles for well over 30 years, if not 40 years, that is finally getting settled. We got some Netflix news. And Jerry Falwell Jr. is continuing to get his comeuppance. So, hooray. Yeah. So, with that, we will start this episode of Let's Weekend. It's going to be for April 16th, 2021. We'll start off as we always do. Chris, what have you been up to this week?
So this week has been kind of a backpedal on the weather stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've been below 60 for the past few days.
Yeah.
Particularly yesterday was in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of rain thrown in there, just to make sure you knew that Ohio wasn't ready for summer just yet. Mm. But today was up in the 50s. I think we're slowly going to get back up there. But yeah, it's like looking at it, it's like 50s and a couple days into 60s and be back down to the 40s. And it says rain and snow showers,
mm-hmm.
which is ridiculous. But as for other stuff, I've been watching more My Hero Academia, still in the like school sports thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
I think just finished the cavalry games.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of knew from the start in the like race stuff,
mm-hmm.
That they were doing. That's when he picked up the like hunk of metal, Midoriya. Yeah. That is, he was going to pull some legend, Breath of the Wild shit.
Yeah.
You know, like the people that just use the shield and use some physics fuckery to get launched halfway across the map into Ganon's castle. It's like, I knew he was going to do some shit like that.
Yeah.
Somehow he's going to find a way to launch himself around, and he did it.
Yeah.
Became a great way to keep it from killing him or whatever.
Because,
yeah, that's some wild shit there, but still enjoying that a lot. Going to keep watching it. Yeah, I think I'm going to stick to the app I have on my PS5.
Because
the website is just pure garbage.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah,
so I would start episodes and it would start it with Spanish dub as the default for some reason. Even though I'm like keep going back to my settings, it's like, no, that's just English. And having to constantly click on the options that put English, and sometimes it doesn't move from one episode to the next as smoothly as I would like. Occasionally just sitting there watching and then I was like, wait, this is the episode I just watched.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck, it didn't just move over. Subtitles are hit or miss whether they're actually there or not.
Yeah.
Which is weird, but so I'm just going to stick to the app because that seems to actually work most of the time. A couple times I would get, if I would try to like rewind or something, it'd be like, oh, this video doesn't exist. Like, I was just watching it. I'm pretty sure it still works. But that's been that. I decided to sign up for a month of HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to check out some of the new stuff they have on there, but particularly Godzilla vs. Kong. But before I started that, I decided to watch Kong Skull Island because I haven't seen that one yet. That's the only one of the monster stuff that I hadn't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty good.
All right.
I didn't really realize the time frame it was set in, where it's set just after the Vietnam War ends.
Mm-hmm.
Begins, literally starts with the Nixon announcing that they're pulling troops out of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So the monarch guys managed to, I guess, go out to the base there and like recruit soldiers to help them on their excursion to Skull Island and figure out what's going on there, which you figure from the name, it's probably not good shit.
No. I mean, you don't name a place Skull Island if it's all cotton candy and rainbows.
Yeah. Especially when they take off and are like, oh, there's like this hurricane type thing guarding the island, is seemingly. that they have to fly all their helicopters through. Luckily, not getting any sort of lightning damage there. But as soon as they get to the island, they meet Kong, and they get mostly fucked up. Some really nice fight scenes there, action stuff, and all that. And I was not expecting that there would be more monster stuff there. Because on the island, you meet a lot of other wild creatures there, like what they thought is like a bamboo forest is actually this giant spider that has bamboo legs that can just fuck shit up. What else? There's birds with like skulls on them. It's like giant squid that attacks Kong when he's like nursing his wounds after the fight, the initial fight. It seems like it's nearly getting to him, but then he just stomps on its head and kills it. Starts eating its legs, like some fresh, fresh food there, seafood. But yeah, Sam Jackson's in it, Brie Larson's in it, which I was surprised by. Tom Hiddleston's in it. Some good actors there. And yeah, it's Sam Jackson seems to be the one guy that is kind of the traumatized, I guess, Vietnam vet of sorts, who's kind of not ready to go home, so he takes this elaborate job on. And because they, you know, do very stupid stuff and get fucked up by Kong, he takes it personally, and so by the end, like, they're trying to use napalm to kill Kong. It's like, okay, that's some shit there. Even when he has a chance to like redeem himself, he's like, no, fuck it, we're gonna kill him. Kong just smashes him. So, you know, good comeuppance for that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty fun movie for what it is. Yeah, so I'm gonna be checking the new one, Godzilla vs. Kong, sometime this weekend. I'll probably throw in Zack Snyder's Justice League as well, when I can sit down for 4 hours for that. I also watched the Last Week Tonight to see like how they're handling that stuff. And it's still not great from what I saw on HBO Now, where they only have the last year's worth of episodes.
Yeah.
Instead of it being a comprehensive, you know, catalog from the first episode on. Which seemed like the whole point of having your own streaming service.
Yeah.
But I think the only way you can get all of the episodes is through Amazon Video. You can purchase them all. And for pretty reasonable prices, though, if you're hoping for the new stuff to appear in timely fashion, it seems like it takes like a week or so. Because if you look at the reviews, it's people reviewing it 5 stars while saying, fuck Amazon for not getting this up. Because they're like, well, just giving it one make people think it's bad episodes or whatever, and it's like, it's not. So they're just trying to, you know, do productive reviews, I guess, instead of like review bombing it in a weird way and just complain about Amazon all the time. Which, you know, I'm all on for that. So yeah, it was fun signing up for the service and then immediately turning off the renewal, essentially canceling it. It's like 3 minutes after I got my email, I was like, oh, welcome to HBO Max. And everyone says, oh, we're sad to see you go. I was like, you didn't know it existed 4 minutes ago. Which is always fun. But yeah, I'm going to dive into that service and see what all is on there. See what other interesting stuff is on there. But those are kind of the things I was checking out early on. As for games, bought one of the new releases that came out in the past week or so called Cozy Grove, which is, okay, so you know Animal Crossing? It's kind of like that, but
yeah,
instead of it being kind of a chill, you know, build up your house kind of thing, capitalism simulator kind of thing, it's kind of like Animal Crossing, but with a lot of the themes and such that are in like a Spiritfarer, where you're kind of going to this island called Cozy Grove, that, and you're like a spirit scout, like a Girl Scout, but for spirits, I guess. This is like your final merit badge you're going for at the Cozy Grove, and you essentially set up your camp, and you find spirits of people that had passed on, but haven't moved on to the afterlife or whatever. And so they, you can talk to them, you know, learn more about them. And I assume eventually as you progress, you go, help them move on to the afterlife, come to grips mm-hmm. with whatever remaining issues they have, that kind of stuff. The Animal Crossing thing is that it's running in real time. So you see like the current time, day, that kind of thing. So I was playing it the other day. I got on at like 11 o'clock at night. So it was dark in there. You know, so I don't know what the island looks like in daytime yet, but, and initially it's just like, hey, go over here and talk to these people. You get like a spirit log after you complete an objective for them. And you toss that under your fire, and the fire is kind of sentient on its own. It's like a guide for you of sorts. So you're kind of learning from it as it's like tutorializing you. And you get to the point where it's like, oh, it needs one more spirit log to move on to the next phase. And it's like, oh, that's it for now. Come back tomorrow, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You get money for completing quests, all that kind of stuff, which you can use at a shop. With a, it's not a tanuki, but it's like a kitsune fox.
Mm-hmm.
And all these spirits are kind of bears, which is also a weird thing. But and your character is a human. So I don't know if that's like an Animal Crossing nod of like all the characters are animals, but you're human kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which maybe, but there's also one of the characters like a bear seagull. It's like a bear seagull hybrid kind of thing. So I don't know there's some weird character designs. One of them's like a postal bear who gets mail for you. All that kind of stuff. So it seems really neat from what I've played so far. Even the fishing minigame is kind of like Animal Crossing where you throw the line out and see a fish kind of nibble at it, and you're waiting for the point where it actually grabs on, that kind of stuff. So. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of neat stuff to it. I'm looking forward to put some more time into it. It's a nice little chill game, but has some actual story to it that you're kind of mm-hmm. working on. And you can kind of build out your camp if you want to, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. I've gotten some cosmetic stuff that I haven't used yet, so definitely some cool stuff to it. And also still been playing more Outriders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been seeing people talking about bugs and all that kind of stuff. I think they're supposed to be putting out the first big update for it to fix some of these bugs. One of them was tied to like wiping people's inventory if you're doing like some of the crossplay stuff mm-hmm. potentially. But I think I've usually been just jumping in for like you know a mission or two before I jump out, so I don't think I'm spending a ton of time in it to make it more risky for bugs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been nice. But yeah, I got to a second city, which is ironically called the first city. I think it was like the first city they set up for the people that were coming off the Ark ship.
Yeah.
That was built to house like 50,000 people, but they brought 500,000 people. And so it all delves into chaos at a certain point. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's some neat lore here. I don't know if the story itself is actually good. Mm-hmm. The writing, the dialogue writing isn't all that good, but still enjoying it. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
All right. So as for me, I have been still playing Disco Elysium. I also started writing my review for it this morning. That game goes in some really weird places by the time you get to day four. Because suddenly the sort of the state of the world as it exists in Disco Elysium at that moment, you start to get a wider scope of it. And I mentioned, or one of the things I mentioned when I first started playing Disco Elysium, when people play it, is one of the great things it does about its emergent storytelling is that it kind of lulls you at first to thinking like this is our world, but as you go out, it slowly but surely shows you that this is a world that is at once very familiar, but also very distinctly alien. And it turns out that the whole Elysium setting is like this because, as it turns out, the world of Elysium itself is not really like a sphere or like a planetoid area. It's basically a bunch of areas that are called solas that are divided by this enormous phenomenon that's called the Pale. The Pale is like a world. It's like this weird sort of otherworldly phenomenon that I kind of want to call it something like fog. But the thing is, once you end up crossing through it, it basically all the laws of space and time no longer matter. And trying to cross the Pale, which happens a lot by the time you get to Disco Elysium, is a very risky endeavor because the longer you end up spending time in the Pale, the more damage it does to your mental health and your overall sanity. So by the time of this part in Disco Elysium, they've gotten it now so where they've developed, aerostatic aircrafts that can, fly through the Pale fairly quickly with minimal damage. But there apparently seems to be signs that the Pale might be expanding and that the Pale is not something that's natural, that it's actually something created by human intelligence, parallel to climate change built into its universe, apparently.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's... Man, the game in this universe continues to amaze me. And now the hard part is, how am I going to write a review of this game that isn't like novel length? Because there's so much I want to gush about. And you know how Dan Reb is. He's fine with it writing a long article, but he doesn't want you to write it too long.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a little struggle. On top of that, I've also been playing Splatoon 2. And I'm definitely getting better at it. But once again, you're still having to deal with people who are just, camping at spawn points, and it just sucks. I have noticed, though, some of the level design that they do try to minimize that by essentially having the platforms where all the... you and your team spawn from, that they're sort of raised up on a platform that is walled, not walled around, but like raised up on a wall that is not possible to cross by, spraying ink on it and then swimming up it like with other areas. So there is that, fortunately. But other than that, yeah, I mean, it's sort of become my nightly routine is playing that game now, so I'm definitely enjoying it, and again, unlike most gaming communities, it's probably the least toxic I've ever encountered, so hooray for that. Also, doing my usual reading, I've started getting back into young adult books again, because every so often I get it in my head, it's like, I think I want to write a young adult novel. And then I remember, oh yeah, I'm 35.
I mean, somebody has to write them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I've been doing this week. You got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
All right, well then. It's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And tonight, I wanted to talk about one of those weird little moments in history that we only know exists because of a very kind of sort of kind of weirdly vague broadside that recorded the event. For those of you who don't know what like a broadside is, well, if you don't know what a broadside is, you must be like, what, a zygote? But basically, broadsides or broadsheets are basically, like, think about a newspaper. A newspaper is basically a broadside or a broadsheet. And broadsheets were, for the longest time, they were the primary way of communicating major events. And a lot of times they weren't like put together like multiple pages like the newspapers we know. They were usually just one or two pages because, you know, printing used to cost and got to be, you got to keep the cost down. And when the materials were rarer back then, of course, you had to make do with what you had. Well, back in Nuremberg in now Germany in 1561, a very bizarre, shall we call it a celestial event happened that ended up, it's one of those things where to this day, UFO enthusiasts like to say, it's like, yeah, see, they visited us before. We've been visited. The aliens are real. But in reality, it was probably more of like a, just a regular normal celestial phenomena. So for example, Chris, have you ever heard of something called a sundog?
I don't think so.
A sundog is basically a kind of atmospheric phenomenon that happens where it's an optical illusion, basically. It's where the sun, when it gets to a certain part in the sky and the atmospheric conditions are just right, it will create the illusion that it either has like a sort of pale 22-degree halo around it or that it's being flanked by one or two smaller suns. Sometimes it'll even create like entire arcs that almost look like it's being, like it's got an enormous planet behind it or something. And in fact, the piece that we're talking about here, this instance in the broadside that recorded it, the Nuremberg Chronicle, it itself had also recorded this phenomenon at various times. And the thing about this, though, is that what the broadsheet describes, even though a lot of modern day, you know, scientists think it was just an existence of another instance of a sundog, what it describes is just so utterly bizarre that, well, I'll tell you. There's actually a whole thing. It's been translated into English, and this is what it says. Now, again, remind you, this is 1561 in Nuremberg in what is now Germany, at the time part of the Holy Roman Empire, and this is what it says. In the morning of April 14th, 1561, at daybreak between 4 and 5 a.m., a dreadful apparition occurred on the sun, and then this was seen in Nuremberg in the city, before the gates, and in the country, by many men and women. At first, there appeared in the middle of the sun two blood-red semicircular arcs, just like the moon in its last quarter. So, obviously, they had had a, you know, scarlet or orange moon at previously. And in the sun, above and below and on both sides, the color was blood. There stood a round ball of partly dull, partly black, ferrous color. Likewise, there stood on both sides, and as a torus about the sun, such blood-red ones and other balls in large number, about three in a line and four in a square, also some alone. Now, that's the part where people think that this might have just been a sundog existent thing, because this is a fairly common instance when a particularly intense sundog is, where, you know, like circles or arcs in parallel with each other start to show up. This is where it starts to get a little weird. In between these globes, there were visible a few blood-red crosses, between which there were blood-red strips, becoming thicker to the rear and in the front, malleable like the rods of reed grass, which were intermingled among them two big rods, one on the right, the other to the left, and within the small and big rods, there were three, also four, and more globes. These all started to fight amongst themselves, so that the globes, which were first in the sun, flew out to the one standing on both sides. Thereafter, the globes standing outside the sun, in the small and large rods, flew into the sun. Besides, the globes flew back and forth among themselves and fought vehemently with each other for over an hour. And when the conflict in and again out of the sun was most intense, they became fatigued to such an extent that they all, as said above, fell from the sun down upon the earth as if they are all burned, and then they wasted away on the earth with immense smoke. Now, what does that kind of sound like? Like it might have been like a meteor or a meteorite, like breaking apart in the atmosphere?
Yeah.
Well, then it starts to get a little weirder. After all this, there was something like a black spear, very long and thick, sighted. The shaft pointed to the east, the point toward pointed west. Whatever such signs mean, God alone knows. Although we have seen, shortly one after another, many kinds of signs on the heaven, which are sent to us by the Almighty God to bring us to repentance, we still are, unfortunately, so ungrateful that we despise such high signs and miracles of God, or we speak of them with ridicule and discard them to the wind in order that God may send us a frightening punishment on account of our ungratefulness. After all, the God-fearing will by no means discard these signs, but will take it to heart as a warning of their merciful Father in heaven, will mend their lives and faithful obey God, blah, 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 blah. Live as is for it. May God grant us to help. Amen. By Hans Glosser, letter painter of Nuremberg. So, yeah, there's actually a image on Wikipedia of this particular, let's see, yeah, right here. I'm going to go ahead and put it in the chat here, and I guess we can link it into the show notes later. But yeah, that is meant to sort of describe, you know, basically illustrate what this is meant to illustrate. And as you can see, if you were, like, say, one of those like big UFO guys, and you were looking at this from like the 20th century, you would definitely think, holy shit, this is literally like the aliens are battling over the skies, and damn. But again, remember, this is a guy who's only, you know, recording this on here, an artist who is recording this from what was directly, you know, told to him by, you know, Hans Glasser. No, actually, Hans Glasser is the guy who also did that drawing. So, yeah. Let's see. It's also been suggested that what we see as some kind of celestial phenomenon, it's also completely possible that this was simply an illusion caused by artillery fire. Because the thing was, at the time, at the time this was happening, Europe was in the middle of the wars of religion, and it's possible that what they saw was a illusion by nearby fighting that was happening. It's also possible that the whole thing was literally just an instance of mass hysteria, because that also happens. Because again, when you're living in very stressful, trying times, the human brain does weird shit. What's interesting, though, is this is actually not the only instance of something like this happening, even within the same decade, because 5 years later in Basel, which is in Switzerland, they actually had a very similar instance happen. In fact, there was even a leaflet that was put out, and again, the image looks very similar. It's a bunch of dark, you know, black and light spheres that are fighting with each other, you know, over the plains around the sun. And also, they also talk about how many of these were fiery red and soon crumbled and then extinguished. So it looks like what may have happened is that either this was a sun dog, or this was like a series of like meteorites or meteors, you know, coming apart in the atmosphere. But either way, to the people in that era, it was a frightening damn thing to see. And yeah, that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, all right, moving on from there, we start the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we have to start with our assholes of the week. And unfortunately, we do have to talk about the shooting of Dante Wright, a believe this is the 13-year-old boy who was shot unarmed and was it him or was it someone else?
This was the traffic stop.
This was the traffic stop, yeah. Where this woman, the cop, basically killed the dude during a traffic stop.
Yeah.
Explain it, so.
Yeah, this was in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
The officer was Kim Potter.
Yeah.
Who, let's see, where's the, trying to find the description of the event itself here. Yeah, he had expired tags on his car, which is not something they're supposed to pull people over for anyway. Because of the shit going on with the USPS.
Mm-hmm.
There's supposed to be some leeway there, so, but she decided he was going to pull him over anyway.
Yeah.
Looked up his, you know, license and all that. Found that there was a warrant for him. We're going to arrest him. Which was for his failure to appear in court on charges that he fled from officers and possessed a gun without a permit during an encounter with Minneapolis police in June.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he kind of was trying to flee, I believe.
Yeah.
And she pulled out what she thought was her taser.
Yeah.
But pulled out her pistol, shot him, and killed him. Three times. Shot him three times and killed him.
After the first shot, wouldn't you realize that you had a pistol in your hand and not a taser?
You would hope you would figure it out right away, that because she was a 26-year veteran, to know that, because I assume they have the pistol on one side, taser on the other.
Yeah, and just for the record, like, you've seen like what a policeman's taser looks like, right? Like, yeah, you've seen a taser.
Gun.
It's plastic and, you know, it's bright yellow. And, you know, the grip is like half the length of a grip you would have on a standard policeman's pistol. Yeah. It's specifically designed in every way possible so that you cannot mistake it for a pistol.
Yeah. And also, this is not, there's nothing violent going on here that would necessitate using a weapon either way.
Yeah.
It's like you already know who this is. You've pulled their, you know, run their tags, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know where they live. You could deal with that then.
Yeah.
If you need to. There's no reason to turn this into any sort of violent encounter, even if it's, you know, just with the taser.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So the body cam came out. You can hear her yelling, "Taser." She's firing.
Mm-hmm.
Then saying, "Holy shit, I shot him." But she is being tried for, I think it's a third degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Murder, not manslaughter. That's an important distinction to make.
Yeah.
Because that means that the law actually sees it as, actually does see it as murder.
Yeah, and they've had plenty of protests since the killing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can go into the next story to see what the after effects of this is.
Yeah. Well, before we do, I just want to point out something.
Yeah,
so he ran from the police, which is, in most instances, a dumb thing to do. I admit that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not here to speak in his defense, you know. He doesn't have a defense team. He hasn't been able, he's not had the ability to get a lawyer, to go to trial, to face a jury of his peers, to go before a judge.
This is a pullover for something that they're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
In the first place.
So
he should be alive for that reason alone.
Yeah. Like, okay, he may have very well been a criminal. Well, now he's not going to be able to go to trial, is he?
Yeah, you've killed a man because of his expired tags.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say, when a cop pulls you over for expired tags, 9 out of 10, the tags are an excuse. They either do that because they either think you might be driving drunk, or you might be driving erratically, or just for whatever reason, they think they need to pull you over.
Yeah.
So I can just I tell you that right now. And then on top of all that, we got the video, the released of the killing of 13-year-old Adam Toledo.
There's this thing, Brandon.
Oh, yeah. She resigned along with the police chief 2 days later, and she was also arrested, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got like the they got her mugshot out over there. She's going to trial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the twist is she was also the police union leader.
Oh, what a shock.
Yeah.
What a shock. And then compounding all of that, we got video this week of the killing of Adam Toledo by cop. Adam Toledo was 13 years old, and was this in Chicago?
I think it was nearby.
Yeah, it was nearby Chicagoland. Adam Toledo, a 13-year-old kid who, in the video, if you watch it, we don't have the video in the article, and
yeah, the article specifically calls out that it doesn't have the video, so you can read this without worrying about it playing.
Without it playing or watching the damn thing. But all you need to know is he was... The police officers claim that he had a gun on his person or a firearm on his person, which is possible. He may well have. And, you know, this was in, I think it was like 2:30 in the morning or something. He was out on the streets, you know.
And this was on March 29th.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. And at some point, if he does have a firearm, he no longer has it in his hands. He may have thrown it away.
Well, the cop asked, told him to drop it. So
yeah, which apparently he did drop, and then I guess he either moved it with his foot or whatever over to near the police officer.
Well, I think this was he was by a fence and he dropped it behind the fence.
It's possible. Either way, the point is,
the point that the cop could see him.
Yeah. Either way, the point is the lights are on him. He's full, clearly see. He's got both of his hands up. Literally shows like, look, I'm unarmed. I got nothing. Yeah. He doesn't move those hands. They stay up, and then they pelt him with bullets.
Yeah, the cop's basically telling him, like, you know, drop it. You know, turn around, put your hands up, and shoots him.
Yeah.
As soon as he, I think it kind of was like 2 seconds from down to put his hands up to shooting him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's not in any way fair for the kid. The kid did everything right.
Yeah. And I know, because I've already seen a bunch of people say this shit on Facebook. He's like, what was a 13-year-old kid doing out in the middle of the street in Chicagoland at 2:30 in the morning with a weapon? You know, where, and, you know, they always ask, you know, where were the parents? You know, why was he out there, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? Those are all valid questions to ask. So then what?
Yeah, what?
Where do we go from here? Because, yeah, maybe the parents should have been
bothered. What does he do that requires a rapid response like that?
Yeah. Why did, you know, maybe his parents were shit. Maybe he shouldn't have been out there on that street. So why is it that when they bring this up in the conversation that they never seem to be able to move past that? And I'll tell you why. It's because it's so that they can pat themselves on the back, convince themselves that they're the good, sensible one, and have to ignore the fact that the police basically murdered a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah. It's like, he's not a threat at the point that he is raising his arms.
Yeah.
He's doing everything the cop asks, and in return was killed for it.
And just as what we were talking about with the last case, yeah, maybe he was a criminal. Maybe he should have, he needed to face justice. He's not going to be able to now. He's not going to be able to get a lawyer, go to trial, maybe do time in juvenile hall.
Yeah, and you know this, they knew this video was bad.
Yeah.
I believe they had put up, barricaded the windows before the video was released. It's like, they knew shit was going to get bad ahead of time.
And apparently, I think, I've heard people say that when they first released the video, they actually took out one or two frames from it.
I don't know.
I don't know if that's true. But anyway, like, they knew it's like, yeah, we done screwed up. And then On top of all this, we get this other story where a Army lieutenant in Windsor, Virginia, was pulled over, pepper sprayed, and had guns pointed at him. And this happened last year, back in December. Like, the dude was wearing his uniform, and, you know, like, you can see him on the video. He's like, you know, frankly, I'm afraid to come out of the car, and one of them says, well, you should be. It's like, dude, that you're not making the situation any better.
And he probably saved his life just by driving the extra distance to a well-lit gas station.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Yeah, because, and see, I've been pulled over a couple of times myself. Once or twice late at night. Because I was done with work and I just wanted to get home, and I might have driven a little faster than I should have. But when the police pull you over there, they always tell you, look, I want you to pull over into this parking lot where there's a street light, or go over into the parking lot, you know, over to this church where it's lit so we can all see each other better.
Yeah.
That should be standard procedure, because that's not just for the person's safety, that's more for the cop's safety, so they can actually see everything that's going on. So, yeah, he did exactly what he should have, which is, you know, slow down a little bit and drive to the nearest, you know, area he could get where it was well lit.
Yeah. But it seemed like these cops were pissed that he did that.
Mm-hmm.
That they couldn't just potentially beat the shit out of him on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are no people around.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, luckily he survived this whole encounter.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting sued.
Oh, yes. Sued out civil the ass. Suit. Mm-hmm.
The one cop that pepper sprayed him, I think, has been fired.
Good.
But only because of the recent outcry.
Yeah, because they got caught.
Yeah. Because I think initially he just got, you know, like a discipline on his record or whatever,
mm-hmm.
which is nothing for cops, especially when they can probably easily just erase it off of their record after mm-hmm. some time.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah. Seems at least like he's going to be doing the right thing and taking everything he can from these cops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of asshole cops and public officials, because of a data leak that we found this week, found out that a bunch of cops and public officials here in the U.S. donated money to Kyle Rittenhouse's fundraiser.
Yeah, that's the fundraiser on the Christian crowdfunding site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is being used for, you know, very Christian things like defending a murderer who went specifically out to agitate a protest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, also the second paragraph here is the killer. In many of these cases, the donations were attached to their official email addresses, raising questions about the use of public resources in supporting such campaigns. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even use like a personal like Gmail or throwaway Gmail or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They use their work email.
Mm.
Which is how stupid these people are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they have names of anybody here in this article.
And I don't think they'd be willing to risk putting them out there, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems the breach shared with journalists by Transparency Group distributed denial of secrets, revealed the details of some donors who had previously attempted to conceal their identities using Give, Send, Go's anonymity feature.
Mm-hmm.
Who's identifying details the website preserved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beneficiary donations from public officials include Kyle Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Yeah. Okay, they do have some names here. It was Pat Gaynor, the Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Given under the screen name PPPD Motor 179. With the comment, stay strong, brother. One from the Green Bay Police Department. GBPD officers, like, Jesus Christ, people, you're not even trying to hide it.
Yeah.
With these usernames. So I do an address associated with Chad Ramos, a training lieutenant in the department, the school resources officer lieutenant from that same department.
Mm-hmm.
several Wisconsin. Oh, this is this one's tied to fundraiser for Rustin Shesky, who's the cop that killed or attempted to kill Jacob Blake. Okay, so that's where these ones are from. Okay.
Yeah.
For the Rittenhouse ones, like, let's see. Keith Silver is an employee of the city of Huntsville, Alabama. $100 was associated with the official address of Michael Crosley, engineer at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, a body which charged with maintaining the U.S.'s nuclear weapons stockpile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sort of people you want to know are doing this kind of stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
All right. Alrighty then. Just wonderful. And now for more dumbassery, the reauthorization of the National Marrow Donor Program was put up to vote again this weekend. There were only two votes against the bill reauthorizing it, both of them from exactly the people you thought it would be. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert.
Yeah, 415-2.
Mm-hmm.
Two people said the bill is called the Transplant Act, which will reauthorize a program that matches bone marrow donors and cord blood units with patients who have leukemia and other diseases. The bill would help thousands of people diagnosed with leukemia and other diseases by reauthorizing the National Marrow Donor Program and the National Cord Blood Inventory for another 5 years. Let's see. Boebert said in a statement, this bill added hundreds of millions of dollars to the national debt while not receiving a CBO score or going through the committee process. Green, let's see, claimed that nothing in this bill prevents the funding of aborted fetal tissue by taxpayers. What does it have to do with anything? Jeez.
Yeah. Just.
Yeah, the National Marrow Donor Program itself put out a statement. National Marrow Program Be the Match does not use fetal tissue / embryonic stem cells for transplant or research. For in 30 years, they have helped facilitate more than 105,000 transplants for patients battling blood cancers and blood diseases. They only use cells voluntarily donated by either an adult donor or cells collected from the umbilical cord, which occurs only after a full-term delivery where both mother and baby are healthy and safe. So yeah, that's some good way to show off their stupidity.
Yep.
Among other things, but I didn't want this show to be an all asshole show.
Yeah. Because fortunately we do have some non assholes to talk about. First and foremost, President Biden announced that the US will withdraw all troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, 2021.
Yeah.
Now, there are two sides to this that you can look at. One is, yeah, it's good. I mean, that I was literally a freshman in high school when that war started.
Yeah, this is the 20th anniversary
of
9/11.
Yep. So, you know, the war's been going on for 20 years. That it is literally the longest in American history, even longer than Vietnam.
Yep.
On the other hand, there is the idea that with withdrawing all the troops, instead, they might end up, shall we say, privatizing the war. And instead of no longer having American troops on the ground, they're going to instead rely on, you know, mercenary companies like Blackwater.
Yeah, though they're already heavily involved in that stuff, too.
That is true. I guess we'll see. On the one hand, yeah, good. Finally, American troops will finally be out of that war. But the question, of course, is what exactly is he going to do afterwards?
Yeah.
Also, he also announced sanctions against Russia for, amongst other things, the SolarWinds hack.
Yeah. So we've expelled 10 Russian diplomats and imposing sanctions against several dozen people and companies. Part of that. Yeah. Sweeping measures are meant to punish Russia for actions that U.S. officials say cut to the core of American democracy and to deter future acts by imposing economic costs on Moscow, including by targeting its ability to borrow money. Mm-hmm. Sanctions are certain to exacerbate tensions with Russia, but she promised a response, which I think they did earlier today, something like expelling our diplomats that we have over there, as well as sanctions against a number of people, not letting them come to Russia. So it's like, sure, whatever.
And they also, Russia expelled American ambassadors this week as well. And this week also, the Democrats introduced legislation to expand the Supreme Court to 13 judges, which is something that can definitely be done and be constitutional.
Yeah, it would be one for every circuit.
And whether or not this is actually going to pass?
Yeah.
That's another story.
Yep. Yeah, pushed by, let's see, who are the ones over at the face of this? Jerry Nadler is one of the co-sponsors, saying there can be no justification for what they did. How can Americans look at the court expected to do justice, to do equal justice, when it has been so severely politically manipulated? Some people will say we're packing the court. We're not packing, we're unpacking. Senator McConnell and the Republicans packed it over the last couple of years. Which, even forced one on just days before the last election.
Yeah.
After trying to use that excuse as why they would never have a hearing for, what's his face? Merrick Garland. Back then when that was in the early part of election year.
Yeah.
Not weeks before the election was happening.
And finally, we got Hope Troutwine, who is the first pitcher in NCAA history to strike out all the batters that she faced in a single game.
I think this is first in all of baseball history.
Yeah.
Of male or female.
Yeah, there is been stories of, pitchers who have, pitched the perfect game. But this is different because in all seven innings, she struck out every one of the, I think it was 21 batters that she came up against, which has never been done before.
Yeah, because usually you will get a perfect game. You can have, flyouts or ground outs or whatever, but
nobody managed to hit the ball this time.
Yeah, basically the coach here joked, saying, it was pretty easy sitting there watching her. Doesn't really put any pressure on our defense or anything, and they weren't even hardly fouling the ball off early.
Yeah.
Even she said her poor team just had to watch me throw over and over and over again every inning. So it might have been boring for them, but I guess they were excited in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, two other pitchers in NCAA Division I softball have recorded 21 strikeouts in seven inning games, but neither one were like this one. Because I assume they had some maybe walks or something like that.
Yeah.
Still got 21 strikeouts. But yeah, it's still a feat that hadn't been done before.
So that thing I said before about how, gender segregated sports should be a thing of the past. Well, here you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so next up, we're going on to the proper show proper, which, of course, is the part where we go on to the regular news. And the first one is one that fortunately has not affected me because I'm getting the two-shot vaccine. But both the CDC and the FDA are reviewing the Johnson & Johnson shot after there were reported 6 cases of blood clotting.
Yeah, which is unfortunately added to the anti-vaxxer narratives.
Yeah.
They're just pausing this, out of caution.
Because
it's only been 6 cases out of, few million that have been administered at this point. Essentially like a 99.99% successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare type of blood clot called cerebral venous sinus thrombosis, CVST. Mm-hmm. We've seen in combination with low levels of blood platelets, which is thrombocytopenia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all six cases occurred among women between the ages of 18 and 48. Symptoms occur 6 to 13 days after vaccination.
Mm.
Yeah, seems to be extremely rare, but they're just double checking what's going on. So they might end up making this sort of a thing where you're maybe more likely to be susceptible to this, you know, recommend you the other vaccines.
Yeah. But don't let this discourage you from getting the vaccine. If you've got access to it, get it. Trust me, it is absolutely the free feeling of freedom that you will get after having getting it is something that you will never experience again in your life.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I've only gotten my first shot. My second shot isn't until May, but I am looking forward to it. Maybe not so much the side effects, but you know, that's a small price to pay, honestly. Next up. Liberty University is suing Jerry Falwell Jr., the, of course, son of the Reverend Jerry Falwell Sr., who founded the university, over damages and his wife's secret affair.
Yep. Yeah, so this is seeking tens of millions in damages because he had, let's see, alleges Falwell crafted a well-resourced exit strategy from his role as president and chancellor in the form of a lucrative 2019 employment agreement by withholding damaging information from the evangelical school about a personal scandal that would explode in public view the following year.
Mm.
It's this whole thing that involved a, what was it, a pool boy of sorts?
Mm-hmm.
Where he was essentially allowing him to have sex with his wife while he watched, which would very much go against the sort of ideals that the school enforces on its students.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really allowed to do much of anything for fear of getting expelled. And you got the president chancellor doing this shit. So, you
yeah.
know, let them meet each other.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Good Lord. All right. So, this next story comes up from Canada. The House of Commons was having a video meeting, you know, on Zoom, because Canada is having their own issues with COVID right now. And yeah, it's they're having their problems. And during one of their video House of Commons meetings, one of the parliament members just walked into the room stark ass naked.
Yeah. William Amos,
yeah,
who represents Quebec District of Pontiac,
mm-hmm.
since 2015, appeared on the screen of his fellow lawmakers completely naked on Wednesday. He said that this was an unfortunate error. My video was accidentally turned on as I was changing my work clothes after going for a jog. I sincerely apologize to my colleagues in the House of Commons for this unintentional distraction. Obviously, it was an honest mistake, and it won't happen again.
Mm.
And it seems like they are definitely like, yeah, don't let this happen again. Honest mistake. Talking about, like, this is a warning to everybody. You've got to really always assume that camera is on and be very careful anytime you wander anywhere near the camera that you're dressed appropriately.
Mm.
I don't think there was any ill intent. It's certainly an unfortunate circumstance. This wasn't the Jeffrey Toobin situation.
Mm.
Or he's doing anything really nefarious there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's the big scandal in Canada over there for you.
Yeah. But next up, we got some news out of Japan. Japan has announced plans to release treated Fukushima water into the sea in about 2 years.
You know, this is from the nuclear plant.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, fairly controversial
mm-hmm.
thing that is going on. I think the U.S. stance is that they are okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries are not so much. But yeah, they've had this water in tanks for nearly 10 years, I think, at this point. I'm not sure when that happened. I'm not sure if it mentioned here. But they've been treating it, but it's not necessarily completely... Yeah, 2011 is when it happened. They've been treating the water, but maybe not. It's still a bit radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
Still planning to release it into the sea near there.
Yeah.
I don't really have a strong opinion either way.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, yeah, it's obviously worrying to a bit, but on the other hand, it's like, what else are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can't keep it there forever.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the good thing about the ocean is if any radiation gets into the water, it can dissipate.
Yeah.
So.
It seems like the concern's over something called tritium.
Yeah.
Which is not harmful in small amounts, but cannot be removed from the water like other selected radionuclides.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's able to, like, cluster together or anything like that.
And sometimes it says, say, the long-term impact on marine life from low-dose exposure to such large volumes of water is still unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm guessing this water is going to get released into the South China Sea. Yeah, that's that might cause some issues.
Yeah, I don't know. They specifically say where it's at.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if they don't announce where it's at.
Yeah, I'm just not sure if it's in this article or not.
Yeah. I mean, it's it might be possible to say, yeah, so this morning we went ahead and dumped it, and we're not going to tell you where.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to some science news. A study suggests that back in the era of the dinosaurs, there were 2.5 billion Tyrannosaurus Rex that roamed the Earth, but not all at once.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense, because the problem with an apex predator like that is if too much of them reproduce too quickly, you've basically got a mass extinction event on your hands.
Yeah, and they were around for about 1.2 million to 3.6 million years, so it's not a huge amount at really any one time.
Yeah.
But the overall amount is wild to think about. Which now means there should be some sort of mod for Days Gone.
Yeah.
That's coming to PC that changes all the zombies to T-Rexes.
Yeah. Probably.
Dealing with that kind of shit where it's like, oh shit, there's hundreds of them coming at me.
Yeah. All right. And next up, we've also got another bit of science news related to climate change. Google Earth has created a time-lapse video that depicts from 1984 to today what the effects of climate change have looked like, basically from space.
Yeah, using satellite images from the past, like, 36 years or so.
Yep.
They have managed to, and they've gone over the video, or these shots, these images, to fix, like, the way they zoom in and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, add detail where, you know, clouds got in the way, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You can link to it and see it. I think it's just called Time Lapse in Google Earth, and it'll have different areas that it recommends checking out. Like, you can, it's not just climate change stuff.
Yeah.
But it does also have, like, urban expansion, so you can watch, like, the city of Dubai kind of grow rapidly over time, or, like, Las Vegas.
Yeah.
It's also one of the ones they show here. Or Dallas, Fort Worth, Seoul, South Korea, Shanghai, China, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Lagos, Nigeria, Paris, France, yeah, Dubai, and Singapore.
Yep.
It's a really cool way of using this Google Earth tech and going back and finding this other data to kind of see how all this stuff, how these cities like grew quickly, as well as like watch glaciers and all that kind of stuff as well. Quite a lot of cool stuff they've done here.
Yeah.
That is worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now. Let's see, they got a thing here where they're showing the rivers meandering in Bolivia.
Yeah.
And it shows, like, yeah, you can definitely, like, see the river, like, you know, coiling and changing course and everything. And it's like, wow. It's, yeah, let me see if I can get it back to, yeah, let's. All right. Yeah, it's, yeah, you can literally see it. It's like coiling and it's like moving and changing course. There are loops of it that are collapsing into each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, take a look at that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really neat to see. And concerning too, because. It gives you just the scope of this phenomenon on our environment. But, all right, next up, we got some really good news. After, God, what, maybe 30 or 40 years of legal issues, the Macross franchise is finally been settled so that it can be released worldwide.
Yep.
So I need to kind of just sort of tell this to people who maybe are a little too young and don't really understand what the significance of the Macross series is. Obviously, Macross was not like the first mecha anime by any stretch of the imagination. But it was one of the first that came out that was... It took sort of like the sort of like hardcore seriousness of like the Gundam franchise, but also combined it with like romantic elements. And it also is like one of the, its creator, Shoji Kawamori, he was one of the innovators for the creation of a transforming mecha. In fact, I say transforming mecha, the design, so Shoji Kawamori, he's like one of those dudes, or he's not just an anime producer, he's also a screenwriter, and he's also a mecha designer. And a bunch of his designs ended up going into the toy franchise in Japan that over here would become Transformers, including the original Optimus Prime. But that also is fun to tie into this because back in the 80s, a company called Harmony Gold got their hold on the Macross franchise, and they ended up creating a little thing called Robotech, which was the first relatively mature anime franchise that became like a major phenomenon in American pop culture. You know, and keep in mind, this was in the 80s. So, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, you had stuff like He-Man and the Transformers and G.I. Joe, which, you know, were not bad, but, you know, they weren't exactly heavy on any kind of plot.
Yeah, Robotech commercials and...
Yeah, shows. Robotech was heavy on plot, and people actually died. So, for a person seeing that for the first time compared to what other cartoons were, as you can imagine, people thought this shit was awesome. But the problem was, you know, Macross itself did not go more than, I think, I want to say, like, it didn't go more than, like, one or two seasons. Because anime, unless it's like a Shonen Jump anime, anime typically doesn't last, you know, multiple seasons. Yeah. You know, it's more like, you know, like a series on the BBC that way. And that, you know, it's like a series and then it ends. But the problem was, obviously, the Robotech franchise kicked off a really big boon for toy makers, obviously. So Robotech toys started flying off the shelves. Problem was, Harmony Gold, after the Macross series ended, they thought, okay, what are we going to do after this? Well, What they did is they basically just straight up stole a couple more of Shoji Kawamori's anime. Specifically, let's see, there was, I'm trying to see here. It was, I think there was one, it was Moss Pita, and I think the other one was Southern Cross. Neither of which, by the way, were actually related to the original Macross at all. They didn't even take place in the same universe. So basically, Harmony Gold had to improvise and create a new canon so that these three completely unrelated anime series are all part of the same canon. And because of all that bullshit, the Macross series has basically been in legal hell for the last 30 years. At least outside Japan. In Japan, it's kept on going pretty steadily ever since. But yeah, finally this week, after God knows how many years, they finally came to an agreement.
Yep.
So now we can start getting the original. Now, for the as far as like the original Macross series, there actually is like a DVD box set that was put out a few years ago that, you know, keeps to the original Macross story. And at least in a couple instances, they even managed to get some of the original voice actors from the American Robotech dub back on. And in one case, they even managed to get the both Japanese and American voice dub, who was for the character Lin Minmay, who, for the record, is the same person, to do both the American and Japanese dub. But the other series are basically have been, yeah, here it is. Super Dimension Cavalry, Southern Cross, and Genesis Kleiner Mospeda. Yeah, those were the other things that became Robotech. Unfortunately, when Harmony Gold licensed them, they thought that they had licensed all future Macross titles. While Big West Animation Studio New and Anime Studio Tatsunoko Productions, those are also the people behind such classics as Speed Racer and G-Force, disagreed on who exactly owned the rights to what, and that's basically been the source of the disputes for many, many years. But now, those are finally over, and we can start seeing Macross and these other series finally getting their proper releases out here in the rest of the world. So, hooray.
Yeah, it seems like maybe the one issue is that, let's see, the agreement gives them, let's see, immediately permits worldwide distribution of most of the Macross films and television sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't specify what titles they have the rights to, so or where. I guess.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one of them is going to be Macross. Do You Remember Love, which was the movie Macross movie that Shoji Kawamori specifically made as a fuck you to Harmony Gold. But yeah, so I'm glad. Part of what makes the Macross series neat is that it predicted something that a lot of us never thought would come to existence, which is the existence of virtual idols. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like Hatsune Miku and that light. Yeah. Macross was the first, first piece of media to predict that. And it became a real thing. So, yeah. All right. Next up, we've also got some Netflix news. Netflix is working on a live action Gundam series. A live action movie with director Jordan Vo Roberts.
Yeah. Who directed the Kong Skull Island?
Yeah. I'm wondering which timeline they're going to be using, because Gundam as source material, because Gundam's got a few timelines you could work. I'm guessing it's going to be the Universal Century timeline, which is the one that the screenshot they have on here is from.
I think that's just probably...
Or it could have been just been a random ass thing. I don't know.
They just picked a neat looking screenshot from one of the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Word on what the story will be for the film.
Hmm.
But yeah.
I mean, a lot of the good thing
choose from.
Yeah. Good thing about the Gundam series is that the Gundam series is very like its characters are very diverse. So there isn't really an issue of like creating a of like whitewashing a Japanese character, because there aren't very many Japanese characters in the Gundam series, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But if they used the Universal Century, would definitely be neat, because that's the one that, well, it's just, it's my personal favorite, because it really gets into the heavy political stuff. Like, all the good, Gundam anime do that. You know, there's always a major political or socioeconomic struggle that's in the heart of it. So, we'll see. We'll see. We also know that, yeah. Oh, yeah, it'll be good. By the way, if anyone who has not seen, the original Gundam series, give it a shot. It's damn good. Grant you that there are parts of it that haven't aged well, specifically the soundtrack, which is disco as fuck. But give it a shot. It's amazing. It's an amazing piece of animated storytelling.
Yeah. I guess he's also working on the Metal Gear Solid movie that they've been slowly moving on.
Yeah. Again, another franchise. Yeah, again, another franchise that is steeped in political and socioeconomic themes. That's going to be interesting to see. All right, moving on to Amazon. As everybody kind of knows now, Amazon is working on a Lord of the Rings series, one that isn't actually like taking place in the actually in the era of the Lord of the Rings book, but is like one that takes place in the past. I'm guessing sometime between the Silmarillion and the Hobbit, I'm guessing.
Thousands of years before the events of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, so it'll be sometime between the Silmarillion and the Hobbit. Because the Silmarillion is basically like the Old Testament. But anyway, Amazon's Lord of the Rings series looks to cost them $465 million for the first season.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's...
But, I mean, when you're going with Tolkien, you don't go with a Tolkien franchise these days unless you're willing to go big. So...
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Amazon has the money to spend on this because it's going to be their premiere series.
Yeah.
For a reason for people to subscribe to Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah, apparently this is also going to be rather, much like Game of Thrones, it's going to be rather sexy as well. I mean, it's also going to be super fucking violent and gory because...
Yeah.
But it's also going to be sexy, which is... I'm not... to be completely honest, I'll be the first to tell you, I love J.R.R. Tolkien and his work, but I'll also be the first to tell you that one of the issues I have with his work is how really... pastoral and sexless it can be at times.
Yeah.
So I'm more than okay with adding in a little sexiness to the Tolkien world.
Sure, there's got to be downtime.
Yeah. Also, as somebody pointed out to me years ago about the whole series, about the sort of Tolkien's books, is the books that we have from J.R.R. Tolkien that were published, The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion. In universe, all those books were actually written by Bilbo Baggins and Frodo, which means that they're written with their perspective in mind. So obviously, the sort of Middle Earth Milo is much bigger than just Tolkien himself. And honestly, I think the Tolkien estate kind of needs to act like that. And I guess they kind of are now. So.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, we got a new trailer for F9, which is the new Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's Fast and the Furious. Yeah, it's Fast and the Furious. You kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah, they introduce a new piece of tech where it's just, I guess, giant fucking magnets that can pull vehicles to them as well as push them away.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the series has been believable up to this point. So why the hell not?
It's just like seeing what new ideas they can come up with.
Yeah.
Because obviously you saw from the early trailers, a car that was basically grappling.
Yeah.
A grapple hook kind of riding along on this. What was a rope bridge, but all that remained was the rope, and the car managed to catch on to the one end and swing it on it.
Yeah, it's totally not like the car would be too heavy for the rope, and the rope would snap, and that thing would careen down to the bottom. I mean, basically, Fast and Furious movies are like, okay, what cars can we get on film, and how can we crash them?
At least the second half of the series. Those first handful of movies are just kind of more straightforward.
They're more straightforward towards, you know, underground street racing, and then it kind of went off the rails into Crazy Town.
I think Fast Five.
Yeah,
like I was where it's they said, "Fuck it, we got The Rock. Let's go all out."
Yeah, we got Vin Diesel and The Rock. Let's just fucking go for it. All right, so I do believe that is we've got ourselves a show. Yeah, we do. We got ourselves a show. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So with that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Chris Logie, I'd like to tell you all good night, sleep tight, and please get your vaccine shot. It's worth it.